Good to see everybody here today. Hope you've had a good week. We have had a really good week. We, for those of you who don't are visiting or don't know, we take a teen trip every summer about this time. We use the kids to mow as many of the lawns for those in the congregation that are not able to easily mow their own or have it mowed for them. And I think they take care of about 10 lawns all summer. And then sometime during the summer, we take them on a teen trip. And this was a particularly enjoyable one. I didn't realize how enjoyable until Guy got up and mentioned that we took 17 and brought 17 back, because we only brought 16 back. And I'm not sure if I misplaced one or what. But anyway, we had plenty of room coming back, so maybe that was the deal. But the teen trip is something that we really use as a, it's almost, as Carolyn calls it, a Bible camp on wheels. It's thoroughly enjoyable. We take along a good number of sponsors, the parents that have kids of that age, and also our college kids. Once they get out of high school, if they're willing to go along as sponsors, we always try and encourage them to do so. And so we had a good group of sponsors and a really good group of kids. They represent themselves very well, and they have a really good time while we're gone. But I just came back really encouraged. We have some remarkable young men and women within that group, and we have some remarkable parents of these teens within the group as well. And so it was just a really good trip. It was a refreshing trip. We left in a hailstorm and came back in a rainstorm, and so that was nothing but good. Had to leave several behind some who are just almost on the brink of going. I think next year we'll pick up Breely and Michaela, and we're looking forward to that. And hopefully Lauren as well. We're looking forward to that. And if we can get Colt harvested soon enough, we're going to take Colt with us as well. I think Colt harvested several hundred acres of wheat this week, and just wasn't possible to be able to come. But we're looking forward to the day that he does. I can tell you that he's mowed more grass than most people in their entire time in the youth group. And so Breely has done so as well. We've appreciated both of them. We're looking forward to them coming. But let me tell you a little bit about the kids that went, because I think it's worthy of attention and worthy of it helps us to be encouraged, I think, for the future. The biggest kids that came along were Mike and Galen. We found out on this trip that not only can Mike present a devotional extremely well, but he can also lead singing, and that was a mistake on both parts, because now he's stuck. But very, very good with the young people, and Melinda working beside him, and she and I guess Melinda didn't work beside him, Kimber did. But Melinda and Kimber really, and Carolyn really, kind of took care of us as far as making sure everything was where we needed it to be, and making sure that we ate, and making sure nobody got out of hand too much. And that was a big, big job, as they will tell you. I never realized that Galen did not have a serious bone in his body. If you ever want to be entertained, sit around the campfire with Galen and Mike, because it's just enjoyable. But the stories that they tell, and the fact that they're out of prison, both are commendable for that. Galen does a tremendous job on the devotionals as well, and that to me is very encouraging. We've got several young men. Tristan as well did a devotional for us, and now Tristan is teaching one of our teen classes. And so we have a lot of people coming up that we've really needed to get involved, that we need to be involved and are getting involved, and we appreciate that. I also had Joan and Bo do a devotional, and they did an excellent job. I was really impressed with the depth of maturity that they had and their understanding of the scriptures. But it was probably one of the best devotionals of the trip, and we just were very fortunate in that aspect. I was telling Lance, who if y'all have not been around LV and his sons, then you might not realize that, but if you have, you'll understand this. Lance has the prayer skills of his grandfather. It's one of the most deep, meaningful, simple, and loving prayers that I've ever heard. And I think there is something to that skill that we can all learn something by. Loved having Eric on the trip. Eric is a man's man, and everything you do, Eric is just there, and he's willing to work. And he's just, if you have trouble, you can call Eric. And so that's really good. So but we're very fortunate on that. And then our young ladies, we had Sarah come along as a sponsor this year. Both Sarah and Bethany, when in our devotionals, we always go around the circle and get everybody's comments. It is not a worship time, and so we encourage the young ladies to speak. It is kind of like a class situation, and they both have comments that have a great deal of depth, and I believe they really help the other ones to think about some of the things that we go through in life. And Bethany and Sarah are both very skilled at bringing out some of the common problems that we all have. Haley and Casey are two of the sweetest and hardest workers I've ever met, the Pate girls, and if you've ever been around them, you know that. And then Katie kind of rounded us out. This was Katie's first trip, and if there's a word to describe Katie, it's pleasant. I'm looking forward to her going on the next 22 teen trips, because she is not only low maintenance, she is no maintenance, and just pleasant, makes you happy to be around her. As a matter of fact, she lost her cell phone on one point of the trip, and everybody just shut down and looked for that cell phone because they want to do something for Katie. And so it was a good group. You who are parents, you have a lot of reason to be proud of them for what they're doing, and because they are commendable. But I guess the reason I wanted to take so much time to go over that is to let you know that I believe the state of the church, as far as from our young people, as well as obviously those of you who have been taking part for so many years, is good. We can do better, obviously, but it's really, really good. And it is heartwarming to see that. It's heartwarming to go with a group of young people who represent the church and who show Christ in a beautiful light. And so for that, we're most appreciative. That leads me into the lesson for this morning, and it really goes nicely, because the question that I wanted to ask you this morning is, are you doing what you're put here for? And after having just mentioned so many that are, we realize, do we not, that we can do better. And so as we go through this lesson this morning, if there are areas you can do better on, rather than just beat yourself up and say, can't believe I'm doing that or not doing that, just make a determination to make sure that you are doing what God put you here for. Not what the preacher thinks that God put you here for, but what you read within the scriptures, what God tells you you're here for. And so, again, the question, are you doing what you're put here for? I like to start sermons off from time to time with this passage, Jeremiah chapter 6, verse 16, because it is such a great springboard into so many different facets of our Christianity. And so Jeremiah chapter 6, verse 16 is one of those that really causes us, if we will, to stop and think. And it says this, starting in verse 16 of Jeremiah 6, "This is what the Lord says, stand at the crossroads and look. Ask where the good way is and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls." That's really what I want to encourage you to do this morning, is stand at the crossroads and look, and to ask for the good way and to walk in it, and to ask yourself, am I walking in the good way? Am I truly living as I should be living? Or am I just kind of going through the motions? Or am I actually doing something that maybe is so displeasing to God that I'll be called to account for it? with this idea of standing at the crossroads and looking, if you turn over to Luke chapter 16, there's a parable here that I think it makes me think a lot. As a matter of fact, it's one of those that just kind of beats me up really good as I go over it. And it's one of those that I'll go over it for the sermon, and it just beats me and beats me and beats me, and then I get up and now it's your turn. So if it applies to you, well, that's your fault. I can tell you it applies to me, and I want to look at it as it applies to me, and I would encourage you to look at it as it applies to you, not to the one sitting next to you or the one standing before you. Jesus told his disciples, "There was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and he asked him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be my manager any longer.'" Well, think about that from the perspective of the fact that we are servants of God. The reason that we are here is to serve. Are you doing what you were put here to do? I've told y'all before, I worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken for 5 years. So I have worked in ancient Greece. I really enjoyed working at Kentucky Fried Chicken. It was a job that was that didn't take an awful lot of, I guess it took some skill to get used to. But once you got it used to, it was just pretty much the same thing. And so you could really do it, and you could kind of concentrate on other things. I liked it. But suppose I had done this. Suppose when I went to work for Kentucky Fried Chicken, I decided that since I was a cook, that I should be able to sample the product anytime I wanted to. Now, they allowed us, if we took a break, to buy a piece of chicken for a quarter, and that was a good deal. But suppose I just decided after that, quarter's too much, I'm just going to eat what I want when I want to eat it. And then suppose as I got going through the years, I decided, you know, this is pretty good. I think I'll start taking some of this home to my family and friends. And I think I'll get some of these pies that they have out in the cooler and maybe start taking them home as well. And as a matter of fact, I might start helping myself to a little bit from the till every day and take home some of the money. You think that would be acceptable? What if I went beyond that and I decided I would start taking all the money? And then at some point, I decided, you know, this is a pretty good deal. I think what I'm going to do with all this money is I'm going to build a restaurant next door called Rick's Fried Chicken. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to support it with the money from Kentucky Fried Chicken. And so I build me a store over here that's going to go in competition with that. And I take all the chicken that they order at Kentucky Fried Chicken, and I bring it over to my store, and all the products, and I bring it over to my store. And as a matter of fact, I use their parking lot as well. Now, you and I both know I could never get to that point without being first fired for the minor things and second for the major things, going to prison. But I want you to think about this, because I think this is where it applies to us. It applies to me. Suppose we take the resources that God has given to us, His homes, His food, His air, His time, the bodies that He gives to us, and we decide that not only will we use it in His service, but we'll also use it for us. And then as time goes by, we decide more and more that, well, who is He? Is He some kind of a tyrant who demands something of us? I never signed up for this. I'll just live my own life in my way. But I'm going to take His house, His a body that He's given to me, His air that I'm breathing, His food, and I'm going to use it for me. And by the way, when I run out, I'm going to go before Him in prayer and I'm going to ask Him for more. How well do you think that will work? Because I'm convinced that I've been guilty of that very thing for a lot of years. And I'm convinced that maybe we all struggle with that. I think the reason that we have such a struggle sometimes with coming back on a Sunday night or a Wednesday night is because we think that that's our time. We think that God has no hold over us on that. As a matter of fact, sometimes we get a little bit angry and we think, how dare anybody think that I should do anything extra? I'm giving Him this time. That's enough. I think sometimes the reason our prayer life suffers is because we think we're doing well. And so we don't go to God in prayer. And except for when we need something, extra supplies for our lives, I think sometimes maybe the reason we don't study the Bible as we should is because we think that our opinion is far more important than God's Word. As a matter of fact, I can tell you for a fact, at the times in my life when I have not been reading the Bible or studying the Bible, that that was exactly what my actions were showing. I might not have ever been so bold as to say it, but can you tell me that if I'm not reading the Word, that I could honestly say that I think His way is more important than my opinion? The question that I think each one of us needs to look at from time to time is, am I doing what I was put here for? And if we find that we're not, then the question becomes, will we just wallow in guilt, or will we do something about it? Now, I'm not saying that you have to come to the same conclusions that I come to when it comes to study, when it comes to prayer, when it comes to worship, when it comes to your everyday service for God, taking care of people, loving your neighbor as yourself. But what I am saying is that you do have to come to the same conclusions that God comes to. And then you and I have to do our very best to apply that to our lives. I think we have to have the good sense not to be meddling in other people's lives when it comes to areas of opinion. I have an idea of what depth of study and reading that I need each day. I have an idea of and an opinion of the depth of prayer that I need each day. And I can tell you, the older I get, the more I feel like I haven't been doing enough. But my opinion from what I can glean from the Scriptures may be different from yours. We're told to work out our own salvation. When I had kids and was trying to raise them and had the job that I had before, maybe I didn't have as much time. I certainly didn't, as I do now. And so those kind of things will change as the years go by. But when it goes outside of the realm of opinion and it goes to command, you and I have no right to ever take God's resources and say, I will use them as I please. And if I decide I'll use a little bit in your service, I'll do that. And if I don't, I won't. And you'll just have to accept it. But I do want salvation. And by the way, I still want you to answer my prayers when I ask you for things. Because I don't think, from what I've read in the Scriptures, that it's ever worked that way. And the reason I don't is greatly in part revealed in this parable. Let me read it again. Jesus told his disciples, there was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him and asked him, what is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management, because you cannot be my manager anymore. The manager said to himself, what shall I do now? My master is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig. I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He said to the first, how much do you owe my master? 800 gallons of olive oil, he replied. The manager said, take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 400. He asked the second, how much do you owe? 1,000 bushels of wheat, he replied. He told him, take your bill and make it 800. The master commended the dishonest manager because he acted shrewdly. Now, I used to think that this was commending him as if he was doing something for God, that he was using God's resources and that he was commending him for acting shrewdly in that way. And it was really confusing to me. But you have to remember the basis for this. The basis for this is, you are my servant. You can't be my servant anymore. So what he's saying is, you're already lost. If you don't come back, you're lost. That's the deal God makes with us. You have all your life to decide to come into compliance with His terms or to stay apart from Him. But if you decide to stay apart from Him, then the idea is go ahead. Live your life, eat, drink, and be merry. Because this is the only portion of joy you're ever going to have. because there is going to be a judgment coming. For those who are not servants of God, at their death, at the judgment, they'll be lost for all eternity. And so he is being commended for using God's resources and at least doing something with it. But the point that's really important is this. After he said, people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than the people of the light. By the way, if you don't believe that, just look at politics a little bit and you'll see really closely or really clearly how the people of the world are more shrewd with dealing of their own kind. We have a felon running on one side that is going, they say, is not going to be charged for a clear felony. And on the other side, we have someone who has claimed bankruptcy and taken so much of your money and my money so that he can be rich on the other side. It's just hard to imagine. They're very shrewd, the people of the world, when it comes to living as the world. And essentially, God is saying, if you want to live that way, go ahead. But in verse 9, I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself, so that when it is gone, you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings. The point is, if the world can use the things they have to gain worldly friends, can we not use the things that God gives us to bring people closer to Christ? And that's it. It's not my body to do with as I want to, because I'm a servant of God. It's not my house to do with as I want to, because He provided me with that. It's not my time to use in any way I want, because He gave me the time. He could withdraw His breath right now and we'd all cease to exist. Our souls would go one place or another, but this world would be over. But we get so selfish with the gifts that He's given to us. He's saying, take these things that I've given to you and use them in my service to gain friends. Why? We can influence people to God with these things, I believe, is one of the lessons we can get from that. I don't think that's the only direction you can go, nor the only lesson. But he says, then you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings. And then he says this, whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with very much. Whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you've not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you've not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? No servant can serve two masters. The idea is this. We're a servant now. And for those who choose to serve God in His way, to the best of their ability, God wants them to be serving Him for all eternity. But for those who decide they will take the master's wealth and they will use it for their own pleasure, God does not want them serving Him for all eternity. Now, I don't mean from a mean perspective of He just doesn't want you to be there, but He only wants those who have chosen to follow Him. And the question is, are we? Are we doing what we were put here for? And if the answer is, probably not, then the next question is, what will you do about it? And the beauty is this. God gives us every opportunity to come back to Him. I want to finish with a passage, and we'll close. It's in 2 Peter, and it talks about that very idea that God is patient with us. He wants us to come back. The day of the Lord will be like a thief, 2 Peter 3:10 says. Heavens will disappear with a roar. Elements will be destroyed by fire. Earth and everything in it will be laid bare. Since everything will be destroyed in this way, and it will, what kind of people ought you to be? You ought to live holy and godly lives as you look forward to the day of God and speed its coming. That day will bring about the destruction of the heavens by fire. Elements will melt in heat. But in keeping with His promise, we're looking forward to a new heaven and a new earth, the home of righteousness. So then, dear friends, since you're looking forward to this, make every effort to be found spotless, blameless, and at peace with Him. That's the bottom line. If you and I will make every effort to do that, even though we fail 1,000 times, if we'll come back to Him on His terms, we get to be with Him forever. We get to serve Him forever. And it's a pleasant service. The invitation's open. If you need to respond to the gospel's call, won't you do that? while we stand and sing.